T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And if you're going to play, go out and win for a change.
Yeah, and it's never his fault. It's never his fault. Every playoff loss, it's play call here. It's the defense didn't do that. There was some kind of random play that went against him. He was always going to play. I mean, but for him to just hold court and essentially just dictate every term and then get in front of everybody and say, yeah, I'm dictating all the terms in this scenario, it's a joke. It really is. It's a joke. It's an embarrassment. And I think people forget how close he is to not winning squat. Like, he is so
close.
Yeah,
but he did. You're right, but he did. You're right, but he did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He did, and you know what? He's milked it for a decade. He did, and he's been Mr. I'm too cool for school, and he's milked the fact that he did win that one early for a decade. When he is, a short hair away from being the greatest all-time that hasn't done a damn thing.
He says, I just wanted to be involved in conversations that affect my ability to do my job. And what do you think of Aaron Rodgers and who else? One of his teammates. And they're framing this as their last dance. You know, like Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson and Pippen with the Bulls in 98. This is it. Aaron Rodgers. Last dance with the Packers, dude.
Randall Cobb, I think, is
thank you.
The one who was making that same reference. Well, if you've got 5 titles and you're going for number 6, okay, then you can go ahead and invoke the great phrase of last dance. But how about last chance? And I know it's last chance you has been taken. Shout out Coach Beam and Laney College in a great series of episodes on last chance you. But that's what this feels a little bit more like, because you know, Rodgers, he's going to the Hall of Fame, there's no doubt. But
sure,
can you get into that upper echelon of all-time great QBs with multiples? Because right now, you know, you're stuck on the one piece. You don't have that second one. And, you know, when you compare all-time greats,
that's
you're never going to touch,
yeah,
you're never going to touch Brady. You won't touch Montana. But can you get alongside John Elway, for example? John, who got the late two-piece. And, you know, if you compare careers right now, you could make an argument for both, but Elway's got that two-piece, and you're stuck on one.
Mm-hmm. I made the observation, and maybe this isn't a fair comparison. I know apples and oranges to a degree, but, you know, Giannis had some issues, and I know people said, well, Giannis, they didn't draft his replacement without telling him. Look at the way Giannis handled everything just down the road from Green Bay and Milwaukee with so much class and dignity. Should I stay here? Yeah, I'm going to stay. And then they win a championship, and Aaron Rodgers is constantly complaining and never satisfied. That said, plenty of blame on both sides here. At least maybe they've gotten to the point, they being Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, they've gotten to the point where this year at least it can work and then they can all move on. But can it work against this backdrop of this whiny? We have the winningest quarterback ever playing now in Tom Brady, and also the whiningest quarterback of all time in Aaron Rodgers.
Maybe it works out, Dibs, but I hope it doesn't work out, considering everything that's happened to lead up to this point. And I'll be honest, I don't like how the media has seemingly allowed Aaron Rodgers to get away with this and also act like he was perfectly just in doing it. I feel like if this was another quarterback, he'd be getting ripped to shreds by the media for, you know, not putting the team first and being more concerned about himself and the selfishness and the complaining that Whitey's talking about here. There's a little bit of a double standard. I'm not sure why surrounding Aaron Rodgers.
Well, partly it's a one team town, and that's where, you know, if Aaron Rodgers turns on you in the local media anyway.
Yeah.
You're done for. It's not like you can, you know, turn to the other team. So there's a certain amount of access, and that's part of it too. I think JD is the very nature of our business now, as it pertains to the athlete media relationship. You can't burn that bridge ever. And I'm not saying that the Aaron Rodgers whisperer should or would, you know, turn against somebody who's given him plenty of content. No reporter probably can. You can't afford that anymore. So in general, in this day and age in modern sports where, you know, James Harden, I'm not happy, I want out. Okay, you got to trade him. And that's where we are now in sports, where athletes have a lot more say about what goes on than ever before.
Well, maybe this works. Maybe it works if from this day forward, Aaron Rodgers brings a little bit of a positive attitude, right? Maybe if he and the Packers are able to say, look, we're going to go our separate ways. We've had our issues, but now we're all on the same page. So maybe if Aaron Rodgers brings a real positive vibe, maybe it works. So let's hear how positive Aaron Rodgers is today. This is what he had to say meeting the media.
I think we can all understand, you know, Green Bay isn't a huge vacation destination. People are coming here to play with me, to play with our team, and knowing that they can win a championship here.
Wow.
Humble.
There you go.
You got to give him that.
Yeah, I'm rooting for that guy. I'm going to root for that guy.
Huh. All right. Well, I mean, maybe there's some truth to that, but I just don't get it. I don't understand his end game. Doesn't you know, one of the things I learned is playing for the Vallejo Vikings, part of being a quarterback is you got to try to show some kind of leadership. Is he showing any kind of leadership right now?
People are coming here to play with me.
Those are facts. I mean, he's just laying it out. Green Bay, I know all of you have been here for generations, but spoiler alert, this is not a vacation destination. In other words, nobody wants to come to this godforsaken town. They come here for me, number 12, Aaron Rodgers. And believe me, I'm the straw that stirs the drink. It just, to me, it comes across a little bit self-serving and nauseating, but, you know, if he goes out there and goes 32 for 37 like he is wont to do with three touchdowns, then all of his hubris is accepted.
Yeah, well, that's Aaron Rodgers today, and this is Steiny, Guru, and Dibs. Dibs, Whitey, and JD today on 95.7 The Game. And, yeah, Cam Inman should be joining us at any moment here from 49er practice. But the big story today, obviously, the incredible, another absolutely, what other word is there for it? It's almost literally unbelievable what the Giants have been doing of late to the Dodgers with the incredible 2-1 win last night. Giants scoring the go-ahead, which ultimately proved to be the winning run on Cody Bellinger's terrible, terrible throw over third base without the netting there. That thing ends up maybe, I don't know, Fisherman's Wharf. And so now the Giants in position to sort through some of these potential deals and fortify their run. The Giants have a legitimate shot at getting to and maybe even winning the World Series this year, but Dibs are going to have to fortify this roster to pull that off.
Fortify, but not necessarily bring in a huge piece, in my opinion. You know, you're looking for depth pieces, maybe another starter, perhaps another arm out of the bullpen, and or another bat off the bench. And I think bats off the bench are going to come when you get Longoria eventually healthy and La Stella, who should be just about 2 weeks away, and Brandon Crawford, who might be activated by this weekend in the Astros series. He said it'd be 10 days, and I think 10 days coincides with Houston coming to town this weekend. So there is help on the way in that aspect. Starting pitcher would be the one area, and I know earlier you guys were talking about Max Scherzer and what it would take to bring him in. He would be a real game changer at the top of your rotation. Now all of a sudden, Kevin Gausman becomes your two. DeSclafani, who's throwing tonight's a three. Cueto's a really good four. And then you can, you know, go to Alex Wood, and you don't really have to use Littell or some of the younger arms in that spot start anymore.
Yeah, for me, you got to look, you got to be in on everybody, but there is a threshold in terms of what you're willing to give up to bring somebody in. I'm in on all the relievers, including Kimbrel. I'm in on all the starting pitchers, including Scherzer, but I'm also not necessarily going to be willing to give up some of the top four or five prospects on the Giants prospect list to make it happen. And if that isn't going to work, then you move to the next guy down the list. Maybe it winds up being a Michael Pineda. Maybe it winds up being an Ian Kennedy in terms of some of the relievers. Maybe it winds up being Rodriguez from Pittsburgh. Like there are all kinds of different combinations that it can be, but I think the Giants are going to be extremely active over the course of the next 48 hours, even if it doesn't wind up being the sexiest names on the board that are coming.
I am willing to give up a lot to get Max Scherzer, but I'm making an assumption. I'm assuming that if you're in on Scherzer, and we talked earlier about reports that you'd have to give him a little extra financial motivation to agree to the deal, that's in addition to what you would have to give the Nationals in exchange for his rights in the first place. But I'm assuming if you're in on Scherzer, you've got some, if not guaranteed, but you got some sense that you have a chance to sign him for next year. If he's a pure rental for the rest of the year, then I would say good luck, Padres. Good luck, Dodgers. Go get it. But if I have a chance to think, look, I have one starter next year right now under contract in Webb, who, by the way, pitched great last night. And as he continues to lengthen, he's pitching extremely well as a starter. But if I can plug in Scherzer to that, I don't mind giving up some pieces that might be a little painful to give up. Bart, I would give up. Maybe they would want somebody I've got on the major league roster now. I mentioned Yastrzemski kind of carrying himself as kind of like a guy who feels like, I think I'm going to get dealt. I think Elliot Ramos is a guy I would part with for the right piece. So, yeah, I would be all in on Scherzer. Bryant is a guy I think history suggests you should be able to get him without giving up a lot, and I think that's why we're getting the reports that the Giants don't want to give up Bart for Chris Bryant.
And that's where I am. I'm in the camp of don't want to give up a lot. And if it means I don't get Max Scherzer, then so be it. And we'll deal if the Padres or Dodgers get him. We'll deal with that when that happens. Because right now, you feel pretty confident in the head-to-head matchup with the Dodgers. Just sit around and let them punch themselves in the face. And invariably, they will do that. And you'll find a way to get it done. For me, this Giant season's been more about the sum than it's been about the parts. And because of that, you want to keep the sum intact. And so, you know, you bring in a starting pitcher, well, somebody loses their job. And how does that maybe upset the vibe in the bullpen accordingly?
Well, I wonder, Whitey, if going and getting a starting pitcher also could mean that maybe Logan Webb is somebody that could be destined to be in some kind of a swing role or maybe somebody that can get a middle inning role. I know they may be reluctant to do that because he has pitched well as a starter, but he has that versatility and flexibility. Strikeout guy who can also get a ground ball. Maybe that's something they look at as sort of a two for one. You bring in a starter, but then it adds to the ability of Logan Webb to maybe help you in a different way.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey station. And this segment is brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. We're hoping to hear from Cam Inman, who, of course, is covering in Santa Clara the 49ers' first workout of the training camp. And in the meantime, just still picking through the wreckage that is the L.A. Dodgers after what the Giants did to them again last night. The division lead is now 3. The Dodgers desperately, would you agree, Dibs? The Dodgers desperately need to make a major move because watching them, there's just something that's not there. And maybe it's, no Betts and no Kershaw, but you watch them and they just look, you see Bellinger after that throw over third base. There's a hollowness in their eyes right now. What the Giants have done to them the last 3 games has left them, I think, with a feeling like, what is going on here?
Right, and the very fact that Bellinger was at first base to begin with, because he's fighting back from injury and he's not normally there, and so he's making throws that he's not used to making, and you've got Muncy coming back from paternity leave and no Mookie Betts still other than the pinch hitting role, and so it feels like the Dodgers aren't whole, but at the same time, you're playing these games, these head-to-head games against the division leader, and you're not getting it done. And so if the Dodgers look back at these last 5 games with the Giants, and you're 1-4, JD, as a Dodger team over those 5, you're thinking we should be 4-1. I mean, the Bellinger throwaway, the late homer from Flores, and all of the other crazy things that have gone on. The Giants have made plays. This is crazy. And the Dodgers haven't made plays, and that's resulted in the wins.
This is crazy.
That's exactly why you get the look on Cody Bellinger's face. How about this one from our buddy John Morosi, just tweeting this out within the last couple of minutes.
Whoa.
Sources. Trevor Story. The Trevor Story market has become more active in the last 24 hours. The Yankees and Giants among the interested clubs. San Francisco would love to add Story or Chris Bryant.
Wow. That's a big move, Dibsy. Farhan knows. Got to make a big swing here. You want to bring this sucker home. It's an amazing opportunity, and it's going to take a big move to get him over the hump.
And I think Trevor Story would provide just that kind of right-handed pop that you're so sorely needing in this lineup where, you know, when Darren Ruff is able to come through, absolutely. And, you know, when you get the power from the right-hand side, this lineup feels like it can be more potent. And plus, when you have, you know, that sort of pop off the bench in case you're not going to play Story, and then Longoria comes back, and now you've got an additional piece coming off in late-inning situations. Depending on the price, I like the idea.
Where would Trevor Story play, Whitey? Second base?
Boy, that's a great question.
I want to say, I have to double check. I thought I'd read somewhere that he was going to maybe play some other positions, but I thought San Diego wanted to get him and play him in center field. Now I have to double check on that. So I think I think he may be a guy who ends up playing a lot of different spots, JD. If it comes to that, very exciting. Clearly, it's just good to know, right? That clearly the Giants are in on all these guys. Who knows if they're going to get any of them? But it's fascinating to know that I was with you initially, JD. I thought, look, Farhan's not going to do anything crazy because that's just not the way he goes about these things. But it looks like the Giants have recognized, and maybe it is the front office exerting some pressure. Wow, we got a chance here. These big names are available. We got to make a play for them.
And you got to be in on everybody. I think that's the key to this thing. And I know we were talking earlier about, you know, Bryce Harper and who's leaking what, and does the, you know, ownership group maybe lean one way toward wanting to make a splash versus the front office maybe saying, hey, hold your horses a little bit there, Larry Bear. Mm-hmm. Like, we can maybe find more cost-effective ways to improve this club. But I think when you're in on everybody, that's how you find the deal that makes it the most worthwhile. And potentially, you don't have to. Like, if you're not in on Trevor Story, Dibs, then you don't know that maybe the prospect or two that the Colorado Rockies want is somebody that you have on your list of players that you'd potentially be willing to give up. Unless you're checking on everybody, you never know.
Right, and that's where all front offices this time of year with the trade deadline just 3 days away, you got to kick the tires on everything, everywhere, because even if you don't want to part with Marco Luciano under any circumstance, if Washington calls and says, Scherzer, straight up, that's all you have to give us, one prospect, for Scherzer, well, then you got to think about it and you got to listen. And that's to your point, JD, about, you know, no stone left unturned when it comes to this kind of year, this type of year, and this time of year.
I got to tell you, Joey Bart playing in Colorado, he's a batting champion. 25 homers, 340 right now, Joey Bart, right?
It could be. The way he's hitting in, 3A.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, that's fascinating. So that's the latest here. John Paul Morosi, who has already linked the Giants to potentially Chris Bryant and Max Scherzer, and now Trevor Story. Does that surprise you, JD? I understand it, but I did not see that one coming.
Yeah, it's stunning. It really is stunning. I didn't think that I did a legit, like, double take and a gulp. Like, am I reading that right? Is this a fake John Morosi? Like, where's the blue check mark? By the way, one more from him, John Gray, this one within the last hour as well. Yeah, John Gray, the Rockies right-hander. Rockies listening to teams on John Gray with suitors including the Giants, Padres, and Phillies. No trade is close. There's not likely to be clarity with Gray's market until Scherzer is dealt, but add John Gray and the Giants to the list there, fellas.
Mega deal, Dibs. Mega deal. Give me Gray. Give me Trevor Story. We can get all of this done dealing with the Rockies.
I mean, how much are you willing to part with for Story and Gray? Now we're talking about, you know, Bart and what other pieces? Ramos, what other minor league pieces would you have to throw in Colorado? Just a full on like swap, yeah. Well, we can't part with Harrison. He's topping out at 97.
I already traded him yesterday, dang it. Boy, I'd like that one back. JD, I know that Trevor's Story potentially a free agent, and not to put you on the spot, I can look this up myself. Do we know what Gray's contract status is? Do we have any idea where that is as Google the Giants? Yeah, I'm working on it.
Yeah, I don't have Gray's contract status in front of me. I got to think he'd be coming up on free agency at some point, maybe another year left on the deal, or maybe one more year of club control. I'm bringing it up right now, guys. No, he is
signed through 2021. Yeah,
he's a free agent. He is a free agent. $6 million this year, and then a free agent at age 29.
Lot to give up for potential rentals, Dibs. I understand why you're reluctant. You're pinching your nose at the price you'd have to pay for some of these guys.
Yeah, but John Gray is, I think, the kind of pitcher who might fit the model going forward, somebody where you can buy low and keep him and eventually sell high, which is why I'm not totally positive on the Kevin Gausman future, just because he's pitched so well and you know what he's going to face next year in terms of a raise. He's probably going to make more than the $18 million per that he's getting this year on the one-year deal, so maybe John Gray becomes a guy that you can sign and keep in a, you know, nice club deal, 3 years at probably $50 million.
Yeah, John Gray, 6-6 for the terrible Rockies with an ERA of 3.67. So if you prorate that to what it would be at Oracle, and I think it would be like under zero, wouldn't it? 3.67 at Coors.
He's got a negative ERA.
Yeah, you would have the first negative ERA in the history of baseball. Well, it's going to be a lot of fun, but it's going to be... it's going to be expensive for whomever ends up getting any of these guys, with the Dodgers and the Padres and the Giants all in the running. It's going to be really pricey. By the way, one of the potential Giants targets, of course, Starling Marte, he's gone. He's already traded to the Bay Area, but not to the Giants, to the Oakland Athletics, as the A's try to shake things up and get their act back together to make some kind of run at a postseason spot here. And tonight we got the Dodgers and the Giants once again. Unless the Dodgers just wave the white flag and say, you know what, we're done. You guys win. We don't want any part of it.
It's likely. I mean, it's absolutely likely when you look at the way these games have gone. I mean, that was a highly winnable game yesterday. You held the Giants to one run. You were in a spot where if Bellinger just eats that, then you've got a chance to live to fight another day. But hero ball does not work. Posey saunters home, and the rest is history.
All right, I mean, coming up.
You said it, Dibs. I mean, they got to think that this thing should be flipped the other way, and now the Giants get a shot at Walker Buehler tonight. Kind of a free shot. A lot of pressure on the Dodgers with their number one on the mound to get that done against a guy in DeSclafani that they've hit well.
Eric, what's the lowest prime number?
One.
Now, back to Steiny, Guru, and Dibs, featuring
Creepmeister Maximus Whitey Gleason
and John,
that's a problem,
Dickinson on 95.7 The Game.
Bananza continues on 95.7 The Game. Kevin Michael, Whitey Gleason, thrilled to be with my good friends. Truly, you know, people say that, oh, my good friends. These guys are my good friends. The great John Dickinson and, of course, the star of the show, Dan Dibley. Dibs, you enjoying Bananza so far?
I'm loving Bananza, and we're getting some trades, and we got action. Things are happening, and we still haven't even got into today the whole drama that's going to take place tomorrow with the NBA draft. The Warriors at 7 or not, at 14 or not. How many trades in the first round? How many ups and downs? And yeah, that's a good time to say, boy, I wish that we'd be doing liquidate all assets today. We're taking the week off. Goo is in Hawaii. But there's all kinds of props about who's going number one, how many first round trades, et cetera, et cetera. E pluribus unum. I think it's going to be a really fun, wild draft tomorrow.
Yeah, to your point, Dibs, the NBA draft is tomorrow. We're going to ask Odyssey NBA insider Brian Scalabrine what he thinks the Warriors should do with their picks. Insider calls are brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitro Plus. premium gasoline. You know, we've been talking about this a lot this week, JD. What do the Warriors do if they get to that seventh pick and they haven't dealt it, and Jonathan Kuminga is there, the very talented but very raw Jonathan Kuminga? And you and I and Dibs, we've all discussed the fact that, he wouldn't necessarily fit your veteran timeline, so maybe they would pass on him or try to trade him. Here's some more information from Chad Ford, who says, quote, "I was really skeptical that Golden State would select Kuminga if he was there, but I've been corrected in that thinking. I've had people in Golden State tell me that if he's there, there's a very high likelihood that they'll select him." What are Draymond and Clay and Steph going to think of that?
They're not going to like it, I'll tell you that, because it would be another player that would be spending, I think, more time in Santa Cruz, at least in the beginning of the season, than he would be with the big club. To me, the move would be, and I think Dibs alluded to this earlier, I'll give it a little more color. I think if Kuminga is on the board and the Warriors are there at number seven and they're ready to pick, they've got 30 people assigned to 29 phones, and they're calling one of each of the other teams in the league, and they're saying, who wants to move up? We got about 4.5 minutes to consummate this bad boy. What do you got?
I love it, JD. A solid four cries for your what do you got. And I think that all of the groundwork will be laid by the time the draft starts tomorrow, so where, you know, you're Bob Myers and company, and you're sitting there in the war room, and you're just waiting to see how it plays out. Now, Cunningham's not sliding, and Suggs and Jalen Green, we get that, but Kuminga could be a guy who goes maybe as high as five, but could be available for you at seven, and so as you go through there, and he doesn't get picked at five, and then when he doesn't go at six, all of a sudden, the phone lights up. And then hopefully you have...
Something's wrong with your phone if that's what your phone sounds like.
Yeah, it's an older phone. Whitey, it's a bit of an older phone. And it rings. I mean, everyone's ringer is a little bit different, you know? And that's sometimes...
That's actually pretty good. I know those phones.
Appreciate that. So
yeah.
Hopefully the groundwork is laid to where if Kuminga slides and you don't really want him, even though they've said, oh, if he's there, we're taking him, you know, float that rumor and see if any other team will bite.
Yeah, well, there is a way that the Warriors could make that fit their timeline. Slates reported on that today. Before we look at that, it's interesting. I don't know, but it is interesting. We also had this from Chad Ford on Twitter, or as the great Phil Garner said once, you know, of course, you got Tweeter now.
Get off of Twitter.
Chad Ford, Wiseman and seven to move up for Jalen Suggs. I'm told Jalen Suggs is the Warrior target. So some of that was, hey, maybe they do this. I guess if there's anything approaching an actual report in there from Chad Ford, it's that he's told the Warriors would love to move up to get Jalen Suggs, and the speculation would be maybe they try to package Wiseman and seven to move up for Jalen Suggs. What do you guys make of that in theory?
I would say that's more unlikely than likely, but that's a new one for sure. I mean, I think Suggs would be the quintessential player with an extreme upside that also would be able to come in and play right away with a skill set that really is complementary.
It's going to take more than that, though, isn't it, JD, to get Suggs?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. And, you know, at that point, I start to think, would you have to include maybe a Jordan Poole in that kind of a conversation? And then would you be willing to do it if you're the Warriors? So, no, I think Suggs, among all of the clear-cut guys that are going to go before the Warriors are on the clock at number seven, I think he's the one that would be the most intriguing for Golden State.
And if it's Wiseman in the seven for Suggs, I'm in. I mean, that's a lot for a player that he looks to be the real deal. And, you know, he was the first one to kind of figure out Baylor in the national championship game. And Jalen Suggs has that real natural point guard ability. He can shoot, distribute, handle. He can defend. He's a player I love. But that would be a little bit of a rich price if you had to give up your prize prospect in Wiseman and also your pick this year.
Look, perhaps that would be a reflection. If they actually were considering that, if they actually did that, perhaps it would be a reflection that they don't necessarily consider Wiseman their prize prospect? I don't know, but we'll keep an eye on that. Again, I think a lot of that is speculation. If there's anything approaching what may be a fact in there, the Warriors would love to move up and get Jalen Suggs. Okay, we'll see. Here's what Slate says about the Kuminga scenario, as they're calling it around our league. He says, if the Warriors do take Kuminga or Book Knight at 7, and he says Book Knight, that's a lot of people think that's going to be the pick, they will not be handed a mandatory role. This is Anthony Slater. At the request of locker room leaders, selective low-stakes minutes would not turn to regular high-stakes minutes until they're earned.
Big
problem. And he says, so 14th pick could emerge as a more essential part of next season's team. So Slate says, yeah, if it's Kuminga, then maybe the Warriors take the guy at 7 that they know will not be a great player next year, maybe down the road. But hey, 14 would be the guy that they would plug in next year. Unfortunately, it's unlikely that Franz Wagner is going to be there, but he'd be a great example. So anyway, maybe you're talking Duarte, Davion Mitchell, Kispert still in play. Also a guy we haven't talked a lot about, a 6'9 wing from, I think, Virginia, Trey Murphy III. So how about that scenario? Kuminga, draft him, stash him, and then the 14th pick becomes the guy that you actually rely on next season.
Yeah, and Whitey, I apologize for jumping you there a little bit, but I know one thing that I've heard was a problem for the Warriors last year, and that was the way that Wiseman's minutes were handled. Initially, maybe proving that he, hey, in training camp before he went down with COVID, hey, wow, there were some moments that would project him to be out there on the floor with the other, you know, star players when they're healthy. But I think there was this yo-yo, Dibs, of, you know, he earned the minutes, and then he probably earned to have less minutes, and then they decided they were going to go all in on player development, so he was getting minutes before he had earned them. I think that was something when you had some veteran players that were trying to, you know, compete for a top 5 or 6 spot in the Western Conference. I think that rubbed some the wrong way, and including Steve Kerr. I think there was a little bit of a pull between management and Kerr.
Rubbed me the wrong way. Yeah.
So I think, you know, that's something that they would not want to let happen again. If the players that they pick are good enough to play, they play. If they're not, then they sit.
But you had really no choice because of the Marquese Chriss injury. So you were looking at a lack of bigs, and Kevon Looney had some health challenges as well. And now all of a sudden you look around, you've got no size. And here's a 7-footer who had no camp and he had no summer ball. And now you got to throw him in there and you got to kind of see what he has. And the maddening part was that one trip down the floor, you'd say, oh, yeah, here he is. Man, this guy is fantastic. And then the next trip down the floor would be, wait, what? What's he doing? The inconsistency would happen over the course of 4 or 5 minutes, not even like 4 or 5 games or a month. Oh, he's in a little bit of a slump right now. He hit the rookie wall. No, his parabola was very steep in both directions over the course of one quarter.
888-957-9570. Let's talk to Rodney and Milpitas on 95.7 The Game. Rodney, if you're running this draft for the Warriors, what are you doing at 7?
I'm telling you right now, if they're saying any credence to everybody saying this is one of the best drafts in recent memory, and some even said maybe ever, okay, use those picks, because it happens in every draft when it's this talented. You pick around 14. There's going to be a star. Remember this. There's going to be a star coming out of this draft, maybe one or two, but one for sure that's going to be picked later in the first round, because this is such a talented draft. You have Clay coming back. You have Wiseman in the second year coming, you know, have more experience in the second year. And then you can have these two other picks. I just think they're sitting fat. You couldn't ask for a better situation for the Warriors right now. I'm telling you, they could hit a home run, and they could hit it out of the ballpark. I'm out.
All right. So mixing our sports. But it doesn't happen every draft. I understand Rodney's point and appreciate his passion. Obviously, he knows what he's talking about. But that doesn't happen every draft. And you can't just assume because Kawhi went at 14 and Booker went at 15 that, oh, with a 14th pick, there's going to be a real great player there, because it's a deep draft. It's a deep draft of good players. The great players, probably only about 5 of them. We'll see. But I think the assumption, Dibs, that, oh, boy, they're going to get a great player at 14, because I've seen it happen, I don't think you can assume that about this draft.
Well, you can get a good player who becomes great if he's in the right scheme, scheme diverse, as we do our Mike Mayock. I always love when you do your Mike Mayock. Yeah, we're throwing it all back here in advance of the 10-year anniversary in scheme diverse.
Scheme diverse.
Yeah, Mike, Mike.
Antonio Brown's not in the building today.
Team Lisp. Yeah, give me a Mayock with some S's in it, and then we can talk about scheme diverse. But I think you could find the right player for the right system at the right time. And that's why, you know, I look at Davion Mitchell as an older player, and even Book Knight, who, you know, went to prep school and had a couple of years in UConn. He's probably more ready made.
How's he defensively, Dibs? How's Book Knight defensively?
Don't talk about that. As I borrow from Jim Barnett, he's not getting drafted for his defense, guys. We know that. Yeah. But I think you can find a player who is more ready made at 14 than, you know, James Wiseman was last year at 2.
It certainly looks that way, and I think there are a number of, whether it's Mitchell, whether it winds up being a guy like Moses Moody, who probably won't slip to that point, Duarte. Right. How much is your draft board, if all? I think it's something to check in on, you know, today again and even mm-hmm. tomorrow leading up to the draft. I mean, I kind of had my four names circled for the two picks combined. Whitey, any changes to your board as far as who, or do you just still have that one name circled?
Well, I still have, you know, on a whole separate board, Franz Wagner. He's like on his own board. But be that as it may, I'm looking at Book Knight. I really like Duarte. I like Kispert, and I haven't liked Kispert the whole time since I saw him, you know, in the tournament. But I just like the fact that if you look at what the Warriors need, and last year, what did we hear over and over? We need shooting. We need shooting. Okay, I get it. That makes sense. And Corey Kispert may be the best shooter in this draft. Again, we're talking about 14, right? So Kispert, a guy who could be a Joe Harris, I can see how if you get Kispert at 14, that would really pay off big time for you. Or again, Duarte, a 3-and-D guy. And I mentioned Trey Murphy, the third, and I need to learn more about him. But the more I think about it, JD, to answer your question, Kispert is a guy that I'm more and more open to at 14 because he has a skill that I think he has something he can do that I can count on him being able to do at the next level.
And the question at that point would be, you know, could he play enough defense to be on the floor for the 12 to 15
right.
minutes a game that would
right.
be required of him immediately?
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary because you saw with James Wiseman, especially last year, defensively at times, and Kelly Oubre Jr., same thing, not being in the right spot, and that causes the whole D to break down.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, one thing that's unfortunate for the Warriors, I don't see another Scalabrine in this draft. On the line is Odyssey NBA Insider, Brian Scalabrine. Insider calls are brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Scal, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it. Draft coming up here. If Kuminga, young, raw, uber-talented, if he's there at 7, do the Warriors pass because he doesn't fit the core timeline, or do you have to grab a player like that because of his tremendous upside?
Are we all rooting for the Warriors to kind of run it back and give it one more chance? They had it, the team, when they won 73 games. Then they got Durant. The NBA was unfair for a couple years. Don't we want Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and one other guy to sort of run it back? So that's what I'm hoping. Kuminga, he's fine if you want to go that direction, but I really, really want the Warriors to make a trade and be in the mix, in the fight, next year when the playoffs start.
Well, let me throw a hypothetical at you, Scal, because Adrian Wojnarowski just tweeted that Philly is canvassing the league, trying to gauge interest on Ben Simmons. Would Ben Simmons be a piece that could come in and fit in this win-now Warrior scenario?
Yeah, but I wouldn't give up 714 and Wiseman and Wiggins for a Ben Simmons. I think you can get him for less, or you can get him for future picks, but I would try to keep some of those assets if I could and see if I can, at that point, trade some of those guys for a more win-now player. But, yeah, like obviously Ben Simmons is a stud. Kind of, you already have Draymond Green, so he's similar to Draymond Green type. And I think if you look at what Wiggins did in Minnesota and what he did in Golden State with, you know, with you guys, with the Warriors, I think like he just went to a whole new level. I would be curious to see if Ben Simmons could do the same thing, but you wouldn't have to give up all that to get a Ben Simmons.
Scal, I'll ask you about Bradley Beal, but I also want to ask you big picture. Do you think there could be another name that isn't maybe being talked about that could become available over the course of the next day and a half here as we get closer to the draft? But what are your thoughts on Beal? Because it would sort of be the same asking price. It'd be 7, 14, Wiseman, Wiggins to make the salaries work. Would you be in on a Bradley Beal deal? And do you see anybody else out there that may become available?
I mean, the two guys you would have to look at are Dame Lillard and Bradley Beal, and I would do that deal with both of them only because I feel like the Warriors have a great chance of winning it. Now, I don't know what Klay Thompson looks like. If Klay Thompson comes back and eventually he builds himself back to what he – then, yeah, you have a – Brad Beal and Damian Lillard would make you a championship-level team. You can always find big men, and there'll be veteran players that get bought out that will flock to Golden State that would want to play with a team like that. So – I would definitely. The way I look at it is, I want the Warriors to run it back and try to win another championship. And so, because of that, I would make that deal for Brad Beal or Dame Lillard.
Catching up with Brian Scalabrine, of course, on 95.7 The Game. And Scal, I hate to do this because this is Whitey, and I'm not on the show every week, but I need your help with something here. There's a player I like for the Warriors, maybe even at 7, that might be high, and these goons are ripping me for it. Can you tell them, please, that Franz Wagner is going to be a real good pro, Scal? Because I like him, and these guys are just giving me a devil of a time for it.
All right. So that's interesting that you say that, right? Because you guys know he worked out for the Warriors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You go catch. So then, Leandro Barbosa is on my Big Three team that we play every weekend in the Big Three. And I brought up Davion Mitchell and I brought up some other guys. I didn't bring up Franz Wagner, and he brought him up and he was doing backflips over him. He thought he was a really good player. Defense, he's tough. So I don't know, I think you can get him at 14, but the word on the street is that Wagner's going to be a pretty high pick, and he's going to be a pretty good player.
Ooh, thank you, Scal. I appreciate that very, very much.
Unfortunately, your phone cut out, Scal, so we couldn't hear any of your Wagner love.
No,
but
we heard it.
What I heard you say is that your coach in the Big Three, Rick Barry, needs to play you more. You got the Ghost Ballers coming up on Saturday.
No.
Do we need to call Rick and get you some more minutes, Scal? Let's go.
Come on, people.
No. I play exactly what I should play. Not any more, not any less. I'm 40. I'm 40 against guys 17 years younger than me. There was a point my rookie year when I gave Hakeem Olajuwon 16-10, and he retired right after the game. So I kind of feel like I'm heading down that road.
You're bringing back those vibes again right now?
No, I'm bringing back the vibes of I shouldn't be. Sometimes I there's times where I'm asking myself, what am I doing out here? But I do love playing and I love competing, but I get it. I get why NBA players, I never understood why NBA players walked away and retired. I'm starting to, in my mind now, understand that. Because when I didn't retire, I got kicked out of the league. You guys know that, right? Jobs. I just moved on to something else. But I always thought I could still play. Now I'm realizing that I know why players walk away.
Scal, do you believe what was reported last week that Steph and Draymond made it known to the Warriors front office that they wanted them to go for more of a win now move? And how do you think that would be received by Bob Myers and by Joe Lacob and everybody else in charge?
I think those guys want the right move too, but you can't make a bad move. That's the thing about this league. And you're talking about winning a championship. We're not talking about having a really good year, or we're not talking about making the playoffs. We're talking about getting over the hump. So how many players are out there that are available to get? And we don't know Damian Lillard and his percentages, 25, 75. I don't know all that. I know Draymond Green is recruiting him hard at USA Basketball, and he'd be doing the same thing to Bradley Beal if Bradley Beal was there at USA Basketball. He happened to get COVID and
is not able to be on the trip. But no question about it that those two guys, I'm not saying that makes you a lock to win at all, but be curious on what the odds would change to once those guys, if those guys were to be traded in the next 2 days for the 714 and Wiseman with Wiggins package.
Scal, you're the best, brother. Thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the draft, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. See ya.
That was Odyssey NBA insider Brian Scalabrine. Insider calls are brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. We know life is busy, so come to Shell to fill up. Save up and snack up to make the most of the stop you need to make. How about that? Apparently, Leandro Barbosa, Warrior coach, is very high on the great Franz Wagner. Probably won't be there, though, at 14 for the Warriors. So I just thought that was pretty interesting. It's going to be a very, very, very eventful day tomorrow, Dibs and JD.
Yeah, and I'd be stunned if they ended up drafting Franz Wagner. I think a more likely scenario is that they draft Jonathan Kuminga at 7 and they trade him, if not immediately, pretty promptly after the pick. I can't see them taking Wagner at 7, and I think you're right, Wagner won't. I don't think he makes it past Sacramento. He strikes me as a perfect Sacramento Kings.
What does that mean?
He's overrated, they're enamored, he won't be that good, and they stink. That's what it means.
Okay.
Well, any questions?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well,
I couldn't have said it any better myself. What do you guys think of what the Memphis Grizzlies did in moving to 10? Because, you know, I know we talked about that, and we were having the technical issues, and so I don't think the three of us really got on the same page as far as discussing that deal. Forget about, you know, what the Pelicans are doing or whatever, but the big takeaway as far as the draft goes for me was, hey, there's somebody at 10 that Memphis must really like after having a day to kind of parse it out, and they're right there in the middle of where the Warriors' two picks are. Who do you think that guy could be, Whitey?
I don't know. It's a great question. I'm not sure, obviously,
boy,
to give up Vanuatu Ashas as Barkley.
Oh,
you know, he was a big part of, as you know, JD, Memphis has had back-to-back, some would say, special seasons. So to part with that, yeah, it's and they got
special.
Somebody that they can share with
one.
Jaw. Yeah, that's a great question. I don't have an answer for you, Dibs. Who do you think Memphis may be looking at 10, or JD, back to you? Who do you think they're looking at?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just think it's interesting. There's somebody, if you're giving up that and moving into that spot, there's clearly a couple of guys that you think, and what, they were at 17, right? So you think there's somebody that wasn't going to fall to 17 that you really want to be able to get your hands on at 10 that maybe you think is a value play there. And so I wonder, like, do they love a Davion Mitchell? Do they love a Franz Wagner if he winds up, you know, maybe getting past Sacramento at number 9? Is there somebody that maybe the Warriors, Moses Moody, could have their eye on that they're going to, you know, made the move to jump in front of not only the Warriors but other teams to make sure that they're able to get them?
And that will be, I think, the most fascinating part of this is what happens between maybe 5 and 18 or 19, where, you know, a certain team's preference will determine just how aggressive they become. And that's why the Jonathan Kuminga question becomes really interesting, because if he does slide down to 7, and we know what we know about the Warriors, the vets want a ready-now player, and if he's not a ready-now player, can't you take him and then, you know, trade him back, pick up an additional pick, and maybe a pick in the future or a player?
Here's a potential answer for you, JD, and this is to anybody can look these up, obviously. CBS Sports mock draft. They have Kuminga going to the Warriors, by the way. Interestingly, they have Franz Wagner going to Sacramento. But with that 10th pick, the Memphis Grizzlies, could this be the guy you're asking about? From down under, mate, Josh Giddey, 6'8", Josh Giddey. From Australia, the kid, how about that? He can't shoot. I don't want Josh Giddey. He can't shoot, but he could be one of these special talents. So maybe, JD, maybe Memphis did that because they want to show that Josh Giddey from down under. All right, here's what's coming up on 95.7, The Game. Are you sure, sir? You want to give up that much? That's next. Steiny, Guru, and Dibs with Dibs, Whitey, and JD today on 95.7, The Game.
Now, back to Steiny, Guru, and Dibs, featuring
Creepmeister Maximus Whitey Gleason
and John,
that's a problem,
Dickinson on 95.7 The Game.
Little minute work for you, mate. 95.7 The Game. Steiny, Guru, and Dibs. It's Dibs, Whitey, and JD today.
Whatever a fright-out combi is. This Bananza has just Dibs. I have a feeling that come next week, this whole Bananza, it's just going to be a fright-out combi. Because at some point, the whole thing's going to go up in a blaze of excitement and activity. There's just so much going on, of course, with the 49ers opening camp today, and then the NBA draft tomorrow, and the trade deadline. I don't know what is more stunning to me, the fact that the Giants have the best record in baseball, the fact that the Giants are being linked to the likes of Trevor Story and Max Scherzer and Chris Bryant, or the fact that Gabe Kapler may be the perfect freaking manager for this team. How did any of that happen?
It's just wild to think about in terms of the trajectory from Gabe Kapler, from introductory press conference where he's just getting grilled like a Vegemite sandwich and just getting tortured by the local media. And then, nice little pandemic season. Oh, you almost missed out on the playoffs. Well, eight teams got in, big deal. But then this year, best record in baseball. And who, by the time we cycle back in our various day parts on Monday, which of the three teams wheeling and dealing, A's, Giants, or Warriors, which one will be better off than they were going in to their various Bananza weeks?
I feel like the Giants and the Warriors both are going to be closer to their ultimate goal by the time that everybody reconvenes on Monday. But the biggest stunner of all of the things that are going on, Whitey, and all of the things you mentioned is Gabe Kapler's ability to – I mean, that is the most stunning because – and yeah, last year, 29-31, and by the end of the year, it was respectable enough even for me to be a little bit more open-minded about him going into this 2021 season. Yeah, I picked him to win about 77 games this year, so it's not like I thought they were going to be a good team. But they got off to a bad start last year. They were a joke. In the middle of August, they were 8-16. He was believing in Trevor Gott as Trevor Gott, took blown save after blown save back-to-back
JD,
games against the
A's. And JD, to your point, excuse me, but to your point, remember when he had to leave Rodgers in the game and after Bailey went out there and then he went out to take him out and they had to tell him, you can't do that, Skip. That was last year he did that.
We're coming up on the one-year anniversary of that. I think the one-year anniversary of that is maybe Friday, if memory serves correctly. It's right around this time because you remember the season was just getting started on what the 23rd of July. But yeah, they were a joke in those first 24 games at 8-16. But they flipped it over the course of the remaining games and became respectable. Farhan added some talent to this roster, and now it's been off to the races, Whitey. It really has.
And doing it against their chief rival in head-to-head fashion, four of the five games in this big seven-game, quote, series that I laid out have gone the Giants' way. And now you're assured that no matter what happens over these next 2 days, you'll still be in first when the first-place Astros come to town this weekend, which is, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, and you can go ahead and mark the tape, it's a World Series preview this weekend at Oracle Park.
Really?
Wow.
Dusty in the
Put
World
in the
Series
cap.
Managing against Gabe Kapler?
And can you believe it? Some used to call him Gabe Gaffler, actually.
Yes.
It might have been my very own four-named friend, Kevin Michael Whitey Gleason, in fact.
Here's the incredible thing about Kapler. Last night, his legend, such as it is, managers around here, they do, legendary managers. We've had a few boats, certainly legendary. And last night, what Kapler did in the eighth inning, and I'll be honest, I wouldn't say this on the radio, but I think he probably did a dumb thing and got away with it, but that's okay. I mean, it worked out. He goes out there and you got Rodgers and that tightrope act, right? I think you used that analogy earlier, JD. And I think we can all agree sometimes, right? With Rodgers out there, it's kind of a tightrope act. So you got Giant killer Max Muncy at the plate with runners at second and third and one out. So you got first base open, and you got Mike Kruko. What I heard was Kruko suggesting, I'll tell you what, you walk him here, you got to, you have a chance to set up the double play. And we know that Kapler goes out there and talks to Rogers and asks him, how you feeling? And Buster Posey said, yeah, that shows how smart he is. I would not have done that there. And Rogers says, I want to go get him. So Kapler says, all right, go get him. And they got the ground out to first, Ruff throws home, and they get out of it. They should have walked Muncy there, but Kapler, believing in his guy, and one of the key plays in the whole game, the legend of Gabe Kapler, whatever it is, it grew by leaps and bounds last night in that inning.
And again, it came down to defense, JD, because, yeah, Rogers got the ground ball, but it's not enough to just get the ground ball. Now you got to throw home and cut down the runner at the dish, and then Turner flies out, and he's able to get out of it. But Raley singles, and then you get McKinstry out, Taylor with the big double, second and third. And, you know, you watch the game, and you also watch Twitter, and after the first hit, everybody turns on Rogers like, oh, here we go again. Kapler's in love with Rogers. K-I-S-S-I-N-G, and, you know, first comes love, then comes you put him out there every stinking game, and, well, then he gets out of it.
Get off of Twitter.
All of a sudden, it's T-Rog, we love you, attaboy, we never lost faith in you. But to Kapler's credit, and this is what the team has been fueled by, the faith from the manager, players know that. And the fact, J.D., that he went out there and asked him, you know, how do you feel, what do you think, instead of, you know, another manager saying, give me the ball, dude. Are you kidding me? I've had to sit over there and watch this.
He gave him a little bit of leeway and tried to inspire confidence there. And I think knowing that even if it didn't work out, you know, he has a little bit of wiggle room right now because so many of the things that he's done has worked. I'm with you, though, Whitey, on this. I think he did a dumb thing, and he got away with it. But so it goes. For the 2021. Like, I think both things are true. I think, Dibs, what you're saying is right on the money as far as the confidence that he's inspiring in his team, and that is a theme, and that's something he tangibly gets credit for. But the individual move was incorrect, but it worked out because it's the 2021 Giants, and for whatever reason, those 50-50 plays this season are overwhelmingly going in the Giants' favor.
See, I think it's too simplistic to say it was a mistake and he got away with it. He went out there and put faith in his guy, who is his closer at times. He and McGee, depending on the situation. Right.
He went out there
and, you know, you got a two-game lead in the division and you're in a tight ball game at home. You know, you still have two cracks at it offensively. And you go out there and you ask a guy, you know, how do you feel? Do I have faith in you? Should I have faith in you? And he looks at you and he says, yeah, let me get him. Well, at that point, if you, nah, four wide ones, we're going to put him on. And it was a trick question. I wasn't really asking you, but you put your faith in a human to go out there and get it done. And when he gets it done, he's stronger for that. And you get more credibility.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But I do think there's an element of luck. I mean, even Mike Kruko, you could tell he was incredulous. He couldn't believe they were pitching to Muncy. As the count progressed, he goes, okay, now you can tell with this pitch whether they're really pitching to him or not. Because he still, I think, had a hard time believing they're pitching to Max Muncy here. And then when they hit the ground ball to Ruff, what did Kruko say? And he's right. He goes, sometimes you get lucky. So yeah, that's the way it works out. Dibs, I agree with you. I do think where I really have to give Kapler credit is because one of the things I've been saying about him is, you know what, he's doing a good job this year. But you know what, managing now, managers don't do what managers used to do. All the important decisions are laid out before them by the analytics and the front office. Clearly, that was a situation that was not laid out for him. That decision was not made for him by the analytics. And he went with his gut, whatever, right? That's what Boach is known for. And that may be the first time we've seen Gabe Kapler like, I'm going with my gut. You're my guy. And it paid off big time.
Well, ownage is ownage. And he's never gotten a hit off Tyler Rogers. Max Muncy has, and he's 0-5. So you can talk about the analytics, but ultimately it's, you know, it's a spot where
did play a role in it. Okay.
Yeah. You got a pitcher who has never been touched up. He doesn't have any bad memories of facing Max Muncy. So you go out there and you put faith in him, and if he's feeling good, and you know, Tyler Rogers is an uncomfortable at bat when he's on. Those pitches are coming from ground level, breaking both ways and also up and down. And if he's feeling good, you got to have faith in him.
Yeah, and I think that's one distinct, specific area where you could say Gabe Kapler's been a different manager this season than even he was last year, guys, where I think this year there has been a lot more gut and there has been a lot more I'm going to trust this guy over what the spreadsheet or what the notebook dictates that I do. I think last year, and we talked about this, he always seemed to be caught in between. Oh God, the you know, Kai Correa is telling me that I need to do this, and the numbers say this, and Farhan's going to want that. But boy, I don't want to lose this guy who's been a pro and he's won championships with Bruce Bochy. And what do I do? And no matter what he did, he made the wrong move. I feel like he's more clear-headed this year.
Sure.
And saying, you know what? I think there are certain players that I have to give leeway to. And it's almost as if Whitey, in a way, in some of the weird moments where things could go one way or the other, it's almost as if he's channeling his inner, like he stops for a second and he knows the information and what the guys in the bench say. And it's almost as if he's saying, what would Bruce Bochy do? What would Bruce Bochy do? And then he comes up with
a
way to
Boach.
Go with a way to go with it. Channel that inner Boach.
Yeah, to that point, Dibs, to me it's stunning how similar if the Giants have a culture that, and it's something you can tell just by watching them, the way they go about everything they do right now with a whole different regime in the front office, a different manager who at least physically night and day from Boach. I know you still have some of the same players, but it's so similar to the way the Giants went about things when Boach was there, right? So it's almost like they haven't changed the culture. They've just built on to the pre-existing culture, maybe modernized it a little bit, but it's still, the Giants are still going about their business and taking care of that business the same way they used to when they were winning championships.
And the essence of culture is really two things. One is success and winning. If you win, you're going to have a better culture than if you lose. And that
two is yogurt. Is yogurt the other one?
No, it's really not. The throat culture is on the phone. And if you've ever had a strep test, they just kind of jab at the back of your throat. The other part of it, Whitey's not yogurt. Yeah, and I will tumble for you, JD. You know that, my little karma chameleon. Okay, babe. The second part of it is communication. If you don't communicate, my brothers, there is no culture. And that's why you got to give Kapler credit. You got to stop calling him Gaffler, because he goes out there and he communicates with Tyler. And Rodgers knows that Kapler has his back, because when Rodgers gave up the ghost down in L.A., Kapler immediately said, guys, before you...
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, oh.